Someone told you knee pain is just getting older? They were wrong. The Joint Relief Institute offers fast joint pain relief covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
It's really interesting to see how these companies are approaching Chicago, right?
She was telling me she's really trying to understand how the tech ecosystem here works.
What's interesting about the baby boomers is that they've never met a debt they didn't like.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And welcome to Monday afternoon, everyone. Here we are in the Allstate Skyline Studio, Steve Bertrand on the Wintrust Business Lunch. And, well, it's not starting out as a friendly money when it comes to a friendly money. I meant to say Monday when it comes to your 401k and Wall Street. I know that Orion is watching that. We'll keep you posted on that. But let's start with the folks from Chicago. I know they come by on most Mondays. Jim Dahlke is the senior editor, and Catherine Davis is a writer there. Welcome to both of you.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, Steve.
I should say a little behind-the-scenes info. They have changed offices, so we used to be so close to each other, and now you're actually a cab ride, so I appreciate you even more. Thank you for coming over.
Of course.
Anything for you, Steve.
Really? Anything? Would you say that? I don't think
most,
that's true.
Yeah, something's for you, Steve.
So Jim comes in all fired up because we learned recently, it looks like, it's not confirmed yet, that Amazon HQ2 is actually going to be not one site, but two sites, and it's going to be where you might have predicted it all along, outside Washington and outside New York, right?
Yeah, really, this is more like HQ one half. This was really one of the biggest kind of like corporate overpromise underdelivers I think I've ever seen. And, you know, this was sort of promised as, you know, an equal headquarters to its Seattle office that it was going to drop in one of these 238 cities that applied. And really, it had kind of, you know, described as the chance to really like turn an entire city's economy around, and ended up picking the financial capital of the U.S. and the political capital of the U.S. So really kind of a huge letdown from just a story standpoint.
And so, right, they were talking about 50,000 jobs, millions of dollars for the local economies and all of that. So and it's not official yet, but it's been, you know, reported by what you said, The Wall Street Journal, New York Times, right? They're going to split it up. So did Amazon play us?
Boy, it sure feels like it, right? Like, you got, you know, all these applications from over 200 cities who were promised, you know, this $5 billion investment and 50,000 jobs. And now, really, the promise is only half of that. So you wonder how many of those cities would have even applied for half of an HQ2.
Right.
And you wonder, really, how much data Amazon was able to get from all of these cities. What Amazon kind of came away with was like very, very rich civic data on 238 cities across North America that now it has at its disposal.
How would they use that?
You could use it for expansion. You can see how they could potentially use that information for growing into new markets. But I mean, really, what we don't exactly know, right? Because all of these proposals were under NDA, and none of the cities could explain to their local communities what were even really in these proposals. So really what Amazon kind of got was the opportunity to put this HQ2 in two locations, two of the most sort of obvious and boring locations, and come away with a treasure trove of civic data.
It's like Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, but they'd already given out the tickets.
Exactly.
Okay, but so if I'm, is it Crystal City? Is that where they're outside D.C.? So,
right.
So if I'm Crystal City and I put that package together, I put together an incentive plan for 50,000 jobs for an HQ2. So I want 50,000 jobs, I want this much of a stimulus, and I'm going to make these concessions in exchange for that. If it's only going to be half that, an HQ half, so do you think they renegotiated their deals, or was Amazon genius there in upping the concessions for only half of the amount?
Boy, you would really think that the concessions would have to change, right? If you're only going to get half of the deal that you kind of applied for or thought that
right.
you were getting, how could you justify that to taxpayers?
Because Jeff Bezos says, well, this is the deal, and if you don't, we'll go to somewhere else.
Boy, you know, some cities, you know, maybe a city like D.C. could just say thanks but no thanks. I mean, they probably need it a little less than some of these other markets. You know, Columbus, for example, would probably be happy to have 25,000 Amazon jobs, right? But, you know, going into a city that's already sort of flush with cash and sort of already kind of economically a little better off than some of these like cities in the heartland, you'd imagine that, boy, I don't know that a place like Crystal City would even be willing to give up all of the incentives potentially
it's
for just half HQ2. too.
So we'll never know, I would imagine, you know, what the final deal was or if they renegotiated.
Well, hopefully you'd be able to FOIA some of this information and they would have to give it out eventually, sort of after the process is over and kind of the NDAs are officially up. But, you know, I do believe eventually we're going to find out kind of what each city was able to kind of offer Amazon.
All right, so there's that, and that had Jim fired up. He's been talking, Catherine, all the way in the cab ride over here, right?
That's right.
You wrote a piece about Upturnative, and I love that company. I love what the idea of what they're doing. They just came in with, another round of funding?
Yeah.
So I should say, this is the company where you can take an eye test from home on your home computer.
Yeah, exactly. So they're a Chicago eye care tech company, and they raised $9 million last week to do, you know, what startups usually do when they raise money is to hire more people and keep growing. They told me they're going to be doubling their engineering, product, and sales teams by mid-2019, and just, you know, continuing to build out that online vision test product they have.
And so we've been talking about a lot of eyeglass companies in the past 10 days or so on the show, but they were in a lawsuit with Warby Parker, right?
Yeah, that's right. So Upturnative actually sued Warby Parker, alleging that they, you know, took their idea and created their own online vision exam. And that's still being hashed out in court right now. But, you know, two kind of similar companies competing in the same place.
This is one of those things. This is going to change the way you test to get your eyes tested in the future, I think. Upturnative. So we'll follow that. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WG and sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. All right, you can't see unless you're watching online today, but I am sitting in the Allstate Skyline studio wearing a very fancy cravat. Is it a cravat?
Cardigan?
No, I know I'm wearing a cardigan. I was talking about this new style company from Whitney Michelle. Is it Michael or Michelle?
Michelle.
And so, but she's making kerchiefs? She's making...
So she's making neckties, bow ties, and bandanas.
What is a cravat? Is that something you wear?
Jim, what is that?
You're looking at the wrong person if you want some fashion details.
Okay, we're backing into this.
You mean like a scarf that goes in like a suit?
Yeah, maybe that's what it is, yeah. Anyway, so this woman was in the world. She would do styles for celebrities, right?
Yeah. So her name is Whitney Michelle, and she worked, you know, she did styling for editorial shoots for magazines like Vogue and Time. And she recently left to come to Chicago and launch a fashion startup, which is kind of funny, right? Because, you know, you think of New York as fashion capital, but... You know, she said she wants to do it here.
And she's limited, right? It is neckties and kerchiefs and things like that.
Yes, for now it is. She plans to expand that in the future. But her company's name is Michelle Men, and she launched it with a Kickstarter campaign and raised over $10,000 in just 24 hours. So it seems like people are interested in this product. And yeah, she's selling neckties, bow ties, bandanas made of, you know, fine fabrics like cashmere, silk, etc.
A cravat, I just looked it up. It's one of the things you would wear inside your collar. It's like an ascot. There you go. Thank you, Bennett. Bennett's really tired of me pursuing this right now. Okay. So she's got some celebrities behind her, right, to help her?
Yeah. She has Pierce Brosnan and Michael Caine. They're both wearing and promoting her line. Michael Caine actually wore it on his most recent press tour for the movie Going in Style. So that's pretty cool.
And so it's interesting because you think of people who are in the world of style or, you know, design and things like that. And she's, you know, had some success and here she is trying to make it on her own. And she says one of the keys is a handwritten letter with every sale.
Exactly. Yeah. She's really focused on the packaging, trying to make it stand out in that way. So a handwritten letter, sleek, cool packaging. And hopefully...
Can I buy something from her online now?
So, not right now. Okay. She's working on delivering the Kickstarter orders. And then once those are done... items will be available
and
on the website.
And I could get a tie for, what, $14.99?
Maybe $130 to $275.
That's close.
Pretty pricey.
It's right in there. Okay. Jim, you wrote a story, and this fascinates me, about a Chicago startup that will send alerts. So I've got a dashboard console with a computer screen and GPS and all that stuff. If there's an ambulance or a fire truck headed toward me, I will get an alert on my screen. Right? And they just got a big contract with the Homeland Security Department.
Exactly. So this startup in Chicago is called Haas Alert and basically does just that. So it notifies you via your in-car sort of dash unit or via your navigation app. So it works with Waze, for example, when an emergency crew is nearby. So if you're using Waze and you see a little alert on your phone that says ambulance approaching, that's this Chicago startup doing that.
And so, you know, currently if you're driving down a suburban road or maybe a city street too, at the stoplight, you'll see a white light or something flashing. This is similar to that in that it's an alert that something is nearby, but it would come directly to your car.
It is. And sadly, what's happened kind of increasingly is, there are the incidents of vehicles getting into car accidents with these emergency crews, right? So what they're trying to do as cars become a little more soundproof and maybe it's harder to hear.
People wearing headphones now, they never used to.
Exactly. So what they're really trying to do is allow people to get the information as early as they can, that an ambulance is approaching, an emergency crew is nearby. They also work with just general kind of highway vehicles too, so not only emergency. If the highway department has a crew out, they can alert the driver of that too to be, hey, heads up, slow down. Exactly.
So there's that, and so the drivers, but of course we're not going to be driving our cars soon, and they're moving into autonomous cars as well, Catherine?
Yeah, it looks like it. As autonomous technology continues to, kind of thrive and grow. I mean, we saw Chicago launch an autonomous initiative recently. Right. And so, these things are coming, and I think tech companies are trying to prepare.
Go ahead, Jim.
Well, part of it, too, is just, you think about it not being that big of a deal when the car's driving itself, right? Because what kind of alerts do you need if the car's kind of like operating independently?
But what are they going to hear if there's no one there to hear
it? The communication is still important, right? Like the car still needs to know that, hey, there's an emergency vehicle approaching. Now let's pull over. Let's slow down. Those are actually kind of the really fascinating parts about driverless cars, right? How does your vehicle know to pull over when an ambulance is behind it? So this is a really key component in that.
Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis from Chicago Inno. Read more at chicagoinno.com. And there's the Inno Minute on every morning on the opening bell at
5:25.
Thanks for coming by, you guys. I appreciate it. All right, thanks very much, Doma T. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, all on 720 WGN. All right, Michigan, was one of the latest states to pass a marijuana law where they will allow recreational use of marijuana. J.B. Pritzker, who won the race for governor in Illinois handily, has said that legal marijuana is one of the things that he's looking at. Well, the Illinois Economic Policy Institute looked at it as well, and the numbers came up clearly in favor of legalizing pot. Frank Manzo IV is on a phone line. He's a policy director for the group. Frank, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you for having me, Steve.
All right, I want to tell me a little bit first about the Illinois Economic Policy Institute so we know how to just further our conversation. Tell me about you guys.
Yeah, sure. The Illinois Economic Policy Institute is a nonprofit economic research organization that examines the policies affecting our state and our economy. We are relatively young. We are just over 5 years old. But our goal is to provide the public and elected officials with sound, credible economic analysis to understand the potential impacts of a policy change like this. And I should note that this report was authored jointly with Professor Robert Bruno at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. And that's, we like to do that. We like to partner with academic institutions, especially in our state.
Well, Frank, that's exactly where I was going to go. So you partnered with U of I. Would you consider yourself a progressive group, a conservative group? Do you have a leaning in one way or another there?
Our board of directors includes representatives from both sides of the aisle. We have a former Republican state senator and a former Democratic state representative from the state of Illinois, and we have representation from nonprofits, businesses, foundations. So we like to call ourselves the middle of the road and then leave it for everyone else to decide on our analysis whether they believe it's credible or not. We think it is. We partner with PhDs.
Let's look at your analysis, and it seems to be overwhelmingly in favor of making a case for legalized marijuana. 24,000 new jobs in the state boost the state economy by $1 billion a year. Tell me how you got to those numbers.
What we and Professor Robert Bruno did is we conducted our analysis based on actual economic and tax data from the state of Colorado, which was the first state, of course, to legalize marijuana for recreational purposes. And then we adjusted Colorado's numbers to the Illinois economy, which is about twice the size of Colorado's. And then from there, we take that and we run an economic simulation to see what the actual economic impact for the state of Illinois would be.
And the numbers when it comes to state and local taxes, you estimate $500 million. And there you're assuming what tax rate on marijuana?
Yeah, what we have done is we've assumed similar usage and taxation rates as in Colorado. So based on those rates of usage and taxation, we'd expect marijuana legalization to have more than twice the financial impact in Illinois, resulting in over $500 million annually in new revenue for the state government and at least $20 million annually in new local government revenue as well.
As far
and that's
as
money, of course, that can be invested in public infrastructure, education, and public safety programs.
Right. So buy an edible and fund Illinois' pension program.
Right. Well, we've looked at possible ways in which the money could be used based on discussions going around about, you know, would it be used for school construction, or would it be used for resolving our pension crisis, or would it be used for education, public safety, all those issues? And we've looked at that in the study as well.
Tell me about the jobs. You say 23,618 jobs. That's a very specific number. What are those people going to be doing?
Yeah, so the jobs impact is based on jobs primarily at dispensaries of legal medical or legal marijuana, if it were to become legalized. And what those jobs look like are a lot of what you would see at typical tobacco and smoke shops type jobs, as well as at things like restaurants and bars. It's kind of that level of pay, but it's an increase of nearly 24,000 jobs across the state of Illinois that would, you know, it's an economic opportunity, opening a new sector of the economy that has already been open for business in 10 other states.
Okay, so here's my thing. As a parent of a 20-something and then a 20-year-old, my son's going to be 21 next month. You know, for me, this is that trap area where you can get caught doing something that a lot of people are doing and end up paying for it in a disproportionate way. And so that's one of the reasons why I lean toward easing the penalties here or legalizing it. I think that, I think sometimes the punishments are too much. Having said that, they've decriminalized marijuana in Illinois, so I would imagine that's already taken a lot of the burden off law enforcement. Would allowing for recreational marijuana make that worse?
Yeah, that's correct that we have decriminalized possession of up to 10 grams, and that's for individuals 21 years of age and older, so that's for adults. Legalizing marijuana would legalize it for any amount of grams of possession, so that would, you know, extend the scope of decriminalization, so to speak. But what the research finds and what the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment found is that marijuana use did not change dramatically, or just didn't change.
So the people who are smoking pot illegally are roughly the same number of the people who are buying pot legally now in Colorado.
That is, according to the research from the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, yes.
How about opioid use? So, has that gone up or gone down in Colorado?
So the research finds that legalizing marijuana can result in 33% fewer opioid deaths and opiate-related overdose deaths in states that legalize marijuana. So in Illinois, we had more than 1,500 people die from an opiate-related overdose in 2016. People would rather reduce pain with cannabis than with opioids.
One of the other things I see is, though, you know, they say they don't know how to test it for a DUI. There's not an accepted level of test. What's the traffic fatality number been in Colorado pre and post?
So since usage does not dramatically change, we wouldn't expect a significant change in any of these other kind of social costs, including traffic fatalities. And a 2017 peer-reviewed academic study in the American Journal of Public Health found no change in the traffic fatality rates of Washington and Colorado following legalization. So there is no reported change in traffic fatality rates.
Frank Manzo, IV, is the policy director at the Illinois Economic Policy Institute. If people Google Illinois Economic Policy Institute, right on that home screen will come this study. Give it a read. Listen, thanks very much for joining us. I hope we can talk again.
Yeah, me too. Thank you for having me.
You bet. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. So the CDC released news late last week that a salmonella outbreak connected to raw turkey continues to be an issue for consumers, making 164 people sick so far this year. I know we're not all Gordon Ramsay in the kitchen, but cooking these big birds has been a struggle for years. Which is fair, because how often are we cooking 10 pounds of meat in one night? There hasn't been a specific turkey supplier linked to the outbreak, but there have been a number of turkey products that the CDC
FTC warns consumers about. Also, since it is turkey time of the year, quick tip. Cook your turkey to an internal temp of 165 degrees or above. You'll thank yourself later when you're not in the hospital. And if you're traveling this holiday season, you might notice the new $841 million multimodal facility for transportation at O'Hare. It adheres mainly for car transportation, but the Metro Line is very close by to accommodate. Look at this, our very own O'Hare getting bigger and better every single day. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
It's 12:53. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. On the phone line now is Lee Sklink, the mastermind behind ThinkLink.com and the CEO of Best Money Moves, an HR tool for employees who are looking to measure their financial stress and then figure out ways to manage it. Elise, welcome to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks, Steve. Nice to be here.
Okay, so on Monday mornings when I come in, sometimes if I'm a little early, I'll sit in the parking lot, check my email before I get out of the car. And that's usually on Mondays when I see my email from thinklink.com, the newsletter that comes out on Mondays. And you had something to do with mortgages today and credit scores. I want to get to that first. But last week, the mortgage application number that came out was pretty low, right? The lowest since December of 14th. We're not taking out mortgages. I suppose maybe this shouldn't be a surprise. Should it be a surprise? We're just not taking out mortgages like we used to.
So mortgage rates are up over 2% from the low at the sort of end of the financial crisis. And certainly it's the highest rate that it's been at in about 8 years. So we saw 30-year rates hit 5.15% last week, and that's pretty high. We haven't seen over 5% in 8 years, and that then we just saw everything kind of crater. It was right after the financial crisis, and then the government started to try and push to flood sort of easy money in the system in order to get things going again, and we've all seen how that worked out. So people are able to afford less. They're not qualifying for as much. There are very few houses to buy. And those that are there, some are in terrible shape, so nobody wants them, and some are very high priced, and they can't afford it.
So nothing's happening? I mean, we're also not refinancing anymore, right, because we're not going to refinance for a higher rate.
Exactly. So you're seeing people who are refinancing who maybe because of the financial crisis they had a mortgage at 6% and they couldn't qualify until now and their credit's been cleaned up, so they're actually in the process of refinancing down. But everybody else who could refinance probably did.
And so is there a way out of this, or is it going to just continue to stagnate? Or is just this the new norm, the new reality?
Well, there's a real concern in the housing industry because not enough new product has been built over the last 10 years. And it was funny because 10 years ago, we had housing experts saying, you know, by 2017 and 2018, we're going to have a real housing shortage.
Yeah.
And at that time, nobody could even believe that that would be the case ever again.
Elise,
but here we are.
We talked about that. I remember talking with you about that maybe last year or earlier this year, where I said, you know, they just keep building new houses when there already are existing houses for sale. And you surprised me when you said, no, we're actually down on the number of houses we need for the population.
That's correct. So you should be building between 1 and 1.5 million new housing units, and I mean housing for purchase, every single year. And what's happened since the Great Recession is we're still not even making 700,000 new houses a year. And for a long time, we were stuck at 300,000 new housing units a year. And so what you're seeing is just, you know, we still had 1 million new homes we needed to build, and we weren't building them, and that adds up. And you also have homes that, you know, they're old and they just need to be torn down. And so you need replacement housing, and that also factors into it. So we're really at a shortage here.
All right. Read more about the mortgage rates and also your credit score when it comes to buying a home at thinklink.com. Elise, great talking with you. Thanks very much.
You too, Steve. See you soon.